flourish, in which all the seeds of karma are present. Released in their appropriate time.
Would it be like every second dimension is solid, and every second dimension is not solid.
That's right.
Like, you know, and in the study of consciousness by Annie Besant, she talks about this weighing. Is there an analogy?
I think that could be an analogy, yes. So it may seem complicated, and yet somehow it becomes very simple, if I can put it that way. It really, because it all hangs together, doesn't it? It all hangs together.
Part of the problem with the, for me, to get around causes and effects was that that's an analytical distinction.
Yes.
And the analysis does an injustice to the
actual manifest.
I mean,
that's right.
It's present, and so we get into that problem all the time with analysis.
Yes. That's right. So, but this leads to this kind of duality, as the Master says, the world of causes is positive and that of effects is negative. So there's always this polarity that is present. All movement is, so to say, polar, he says, but there's always a polarity there. Well, and then so he speaks of the intermediary spheres, the projected shadows of the worlds of causes and negatives. Of the worlds of causes. Well, I think maybe we'll look at this final part tomorrow of letter 18 and wait till next week to start letter 68. Is that all right? We may never get through, but I'll give you the papers for all the others if you'd like, even though we don't get to them. And we'll at least start tomorrow. We'll finish letter 18 tomorrow, come what may.
The Mahatma Letters, Session 6.
We never left it, did we?
It's a good number.
It's a good number. Well, there certainly is a lot in it, isn't there? And certainly very much that can be explored in it. And as I recall, we were at the very bottom of page 65, and the worlds of causes and worlds of effects. I think to some extent, it was occurring to me to some extent, when it says worlds, we're not necessarily talking about the world as we think of the world when we say the world's in a sorry state, you know. what the Mahatma is talking about, and I say this from a point of view also that HPB makes clear in the Bowen notes. She, according to Commander Bowen, and you may be familiar with these notes which are on how to study theosophy or how she, it's been brought together in many sources, have republished these notes made by one of her students at the Secret Doctrine classes. And it appears that early on in the studies, according to Commander Bowen, she said, as much had been given out as could be given out to the world at this time. And so, interestingly, Bowen evidently asked her, what do you mean by world? Now, I think it's interesting that he would do that, because I think if we had heard her make that statement, this is as much as could be given to the world at this time, we would just assume the world as we know it, the geographical planet on which we live, is the world. But he asked her what she meant by the world. And her response is very interesting, because her response, and I didn't bring that along with me this morning, but I remember it well, is the world is personal, or it's man human, living in his personal nature. Isn't that an interesting response? That's what world meant. Now, could it be, therefore, that this concatenation of worlds is made up of worlds of causes and worlds of effects, that it not only may refer to the globes, as they've been known, in the planetary chain, but also to those spheres, if I can use that term, those spheres or fields in which we normally live in our personal nature, which would then include not simply the physical, but the etheric and the pranic, comic, and one aspect at least of the monastic. So from that point of view, there are both effects, causes and effects at every level in these worlds. And therefore, this is one of the reasons, because when he speaks of that chain of worlds he's been telling us about, it of course is the chain of the globes of a particular chain, the Earth's planetary chain. But if we keep in mind the fact that those globes are intimately connected with the fields in which we operate, the human constitution operates, there is a direct relationship at every point, isn't there, between, let us say, the comic plane, the plane of emotion, desire, and so on, and the globes which are inhabited at certain periods in the whole cycle of the involutionary evolutionary cycle. There is a close connection, just as there is a very close connection between our physical bodies and the planet Earth, which we inhabit, which we've already pointed out, that it develops pari passu with the planet. We develop, the planet develops with the physicality. So I think we need to keep in mind a kind of almost dual meaning, if I can put it that way, or at least a correspondentially significant meaning in this matter of the spheres of causes and the spheres of effects. This has a tremendous bearing also on what we will be looking at in letter 68 and subsequent letters that deal with Devachan, which are the other letters that I had hoped we'd get to, but suddenly realized this is the end of the second week and we haven't made much progress. And I hope I haven't bored you along in all of this, that I've taken so much time. And you must think that I
wish all the boredom was similar to one of the whole.
But it is true that, you know, unless you really begin to look at this, and I say this because I'm going to pause at this point and have you, if you have your book, turn to letter 44, which is not one that we're studying necessarily, but one that I think is... I want you to look at page 119, which is in the middle of... Now, this letter 44 is to me one of the very significant letters. It is the second letter of cosmological notes. And indeed, it's a letter or it's not so much a letter as answers to questions. It's a letter, of course, but it's answers to questions, and it's this: the first set of cosmological notes appears as an appendix in this chronological edition. We've already mentioned that. Originally published in the letters of Blavatsky to Sinnott. But look at question number 3. Do worlds of effects intervene between the worlds of activity in the series of descent? This is the evolutionary. Now, when he says worlds of activity, I think he's referring, Sinnott's question is referring to what has been called worlds of causes, of course. Now, here we have a later explanation that I think ties in very helpfully with what is being said in letter 18. That's why we have the advantage, which Sinnott didn't have, of having these letters. He had to ask all the questions. Now, the worlds of effects are not lokas or localities. The term loka, like kamaloka, rupaloka, L-O-K-A, indicates a kind of stationary place, and therefore a locality. In fact, our word locality is very much related. The English word locality is related to the Sanskrit term loka. So, but it's that stationary place. They are the shadow of the world of causes. They're souls, worlds having, like men, their seven principles, which develop and grow simultaneously with the body. And so we have here a very interesting correlation that is given, of indeed prepares us in a sense also for letter 68 in the after-death states in Devachan. So if you look at it closely, the body, which is our physical body, is wedded to the planet Earth, of course. And on the dissolution of the body, returns. Dust to dust, ashes to ashes, all the rest of it returns. All right. His individual Jivatma life principle, and this is the, I'll put it the way they have it, and then we'll discuss it later. This is the life principle. Returns to, or is that which is called in physiology animal spirits, returns after death to its source, which is Fohat. And we'll look at that more closely. That's its source, it says. That's what it says. To its source, Fohat. The Linga Shariram which is now called the etheric, notice that, will be drawn into Akasha. That we've already commented on to some extent, that this is the kind of secondary plastic substance, you see. Then the Kama Rupa is drawn into the universal Shakti. Which is an interesting phrase, because this is the universal power, which is also part of Fohat from one point of view, very much part of it. The will force, or universal energy. His animal soul borrowed from the breath of universal mind, so universal mind, which of course in the secret doctrine is referred to as Mahat, universal mind, universal consciousness, will return to the Dian Chohans. And this is in accordance with what we've already said about the Dian Chohans, isn't it? In that sense, you see. His sixth principle, from the matrix of the great passive principle, so the sixth principle, which is buddhi, is the great passive principle, remains. Whether drawn into or ejected from the matrix of the great passive principle must remain in its own sphere, either as part of the crude material or as an individualized entity to be reborn in a higher world of causes. And it's the seventh, therefore, that will carry it forward. And here we have the monad that will then, in that it's passive until united with manas. So we begin to see this source for all of this. Now, the world of causes then, and it's the magnetic, the evolution of worlds, if you look at the answer to number 4 on page 119, the evolution of worlds cannot be considered apart from the evolution of everything created or having being on these worlds. So in one sense, all of this is the area in which there is both cause and effect, isn't there? At each of these levels, we are casting shadows, can I put it this way, on the source. But I think it may be helpful to begin to see the relationship then, because what then is carried into these levels are the causes. Even write it properly. Which then come into effects, which produce further causes for new incarnation, originating with the monad.
I remember reading a quotation in the secret doctrine that some of what we call principles are vehicles. Some are principles, and wouldn't they be the ones that are principles would be the causes? And
yes.
The
effects. So you can look at it that way too. Yes, very definitely. Because these effects will produce from these principles new vehicles, won't they? Can we put it that way?
Understood it that, say, the principle of karma, that's a disembodied principle.
That's right.
But it gathers around it what we now call an astral body.
That's right.
The astral body is the effect.
Is the effect. Yes.
Aspect of consciousness that is karma.
Yes, yes. So, but it's as though these effects, I like to think of them as seeds, which indeed is the term that's used in the secret doctrine of shishtas, is the Sanskrit term that is used, which are seeds, which then sort of and they therefore produce new causes, which produce new effects, and we have this cycle then. But I thought that it might be helpful to turn to that letter 44 to begin to see The world of causes is positive, that of effects negative, but there's an interlinking. So the causation, is, however, is not only this way, but the causation is also this way.
Yeah.
Jim?
Using the causes there, an intuition that maybe the real function of Buddhi beyond the mana's function is to see karma directly and unhindered.
That's very true. This may well be the, yes, infused by the seventh.
Right.
And always infused by the seventh, which is the universal. To me, this, when we come to 68, if we get to it, gives also another meaning to the point from where reincarnation may start. And it may not be as we've sometimes thought it to be, I can say. Anyway, this is just going to be a conjecture. Why shouldn't we speculate? You know, because in one sense, the Mahatma says it. But in another sense, it doesn't. But perhaps that begins to be helpful in looking back now to letter 18. Thus it becomes evident that every sphere of causes, and our earth is one, is not only interlinked with and surrounded by, but actually separated from its nearest neighbor, the higher sphere of causality, by an impenetrable atmosphere, in its spiritual sense, of effects bordering on and even interlinking, never mixing with the next sphere. So that there is, and actually between these, and we get this, of course, in the secret doctrine, between each of these levels, there is what is known as a laya point. Where it's as though, so that this is the impenetrability from that point of view. The secret doctrine deals a great deal between each of these spheres. It's the nearest analogy that I come to, maybe somebody will have a better analogy, is that when you inhale, there is a fraction of a second which is not either the inhalation nor yet the exhalation. There's that where it's neither one nor the other. And the laya point, it's often called the zero point. It's the point where it's not physical, but it's not yet prana. It's the pranic level. Or the etheric, to use the other terms. So that there is that laya point between spheres, which is the impenetrable, as he says it, atmosphere of effects bordering on and even interlinking, but never mixing with the next sphere. So that this is what gives us the positive, negative also in that sense.
65.
65.
65.
6 lines
up.
You have the caterpillar and the butterfly.
Yes.
Just between the caterpillar and the butterfly, there are 0 points. You can't say it's a butterfly.
That's right.
It's a caterpillar.
Yes. So it's the same thing. Yes.
Sure. Is it similar to what they call in yoga, the point between two thoughts?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sure. It would be like the midpoint on a pendulum.
Yes, it is. Whereas
it's not energy either way. It's that midpoint where a change occurs.
A change occurs.
But it's so.
That's right. But I thought by putting this up, you begin to see. Does it help? I hope it is. I hope I haven't confused everybody further. Sometimes, of course, I think if I confuse everybody enough, there won't be any questions in the. Generally, I do welcome your questions. and trying to get at it. But I thought that might help to go to that letter and come back and see this in that sense, you see.
I was a bit slow in catching up with that last letter, 44. I wondered if some of the comments, some of the points you're discussing now, where it said, the body of man is wedded to and remains forever within the body of his planet.
Yes.
This led, I think, many theosophists to feel that we couldn't go off to other planets.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But the way in which you're dealing with it, and your reference to HPB's answer to Commander Bowen, means that you're taking your world and your nature with you anyway.
So
it isn't quite literally in the way that many people thought.
But, you know, it would be so much easier. I suppose it would. I don't know. But I suppose in many ways it would be so much easier if we could say, well, I'm not coming back to this Earth again. I'm going off to Mars or Venus or whatever. Well, that still is part of our Earth chain because it's our solar system. You can't escape the system in which the incarnations or the whole developmental process is taking place. So for us, of course, at this stage, it's Earth with its particular satellites, which is the solar system. Now the planets, other planetary chains, this is the only planetary chain, I should say, we are told, and I can only say we are told. I mean, I wasn't there when it got laid out by the Logos by any means, and I'm not really privy to the mind of Ishvara. But so we are told this is the only planetary chain that comes this far into the density of what we call matter. So, so it doesn't matter if you want to go to Venus, you can. That's still part of our planetary chain. It's part of the solar system of the planet Earth. Remember that. All the asteroids and everything else are still part of this whole congeries that we call planet Earth, not something else. Does that make it clear, Gavin?
Too? Yeah.
So, all right. So
we can go to Venus,
you can, if you like, yes.
If you find a plan.
If you find a way, yes. Transastral Airlines operates. You can get a reservation.
Definitely rather go that way than literally, since it's 600 degrees.
Yes, that's right.
Let's go astral.
That's much better. What'd you say, Joan?
Hot or cold.
Hot or cold. Yeah, that's right.
What are they? 600 degrees hot or cold?
600 degrees hot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a little warm. I mean, there are frosty mornings when you'd like to have it maybe that warm, but and there are days in August when it seems that warm. But after all. All right, so we begin to see this tremendous interlinking, which is there, which is spoken of, this interlinking, but never mixing with, but intimately interlinking through cause and effect, because causes operate from the whole to the whole, as it were, but operate also at each in each of these spheres, each field. So it's a constant polarity. And that, of course, is, as they say, all movement is, so to say, polar. It's interesting that at this point, of course, the Mahatma is saying to Sinnet, it's very difficult to convey his meaning. But it's interesting, he says, but I'll go on. I've gotten started, so I'll go on. And make of it what you will. And, of course, it led to many questions. Now, the intermediary spheres, being but projected shadows of the worlds of causes, are negatives, in the letter is not quite clear in the penmanship of the master, by the last. They are the great halting places, the stations in which, now we're still before the human stage, the new self-conscious egos to be. Now, these are the ones that have survived this initial parting of the ways of the laggards that have perished, but not yet self-conscious. It's a difficult concept, I think, sometimes to grasp. Not yet self-conscious. The self-begotten progeny of the old and disembodied egos of our planet are gestated. It's an interesting, the self-begotten progeny of the old and disembodied egos of our planet. Now, that is referring to the fact that we are on the fourth round. The preceding three rounds left, as it were, how can I put it, from the last round, the third round that got here, when the earth wasn't what it is today, because obviously it was at a different stage, the third round stage. This is dealt with much more at length, of course, in volume two of The Secret Doctrine, dealing with anthropogenesis, and you get something of the earlier rounds. But for our purposes here, I think it's enough to point out that certain aspects, I hesitate to say form, but in a sense forms of consciousness were left to be reawakened when the cycle came down to the fourth round where we are, and which is dealt with quite fully in anthropogenesis and in the earlier stages of this fourth round. Now, is that somewhat clear or not clear?
She's just left in the field of the earth.
In the field of this globe, right. In the field of the planet Earth, as it was in the preceding round, which is not in the preceding root race, which I will use that term, we're already in the fifth root race, fifth developmental stage. But so there have been four of these stages preceding, which are well spoken of in the Secret Doctrine, Volume 2. But in the earlier round, at the end of the seventh visitation to planet Earth, of the third round, seventh stage, certain seeds were left to be reawakened when the life cycle entered for the fourth. And that's the old disembodied egos of our planet.
So we have disembodied egos now?
We did have. And now we did have. They were taken up. Some of that may be us. Who knows?
They're held by the seed manu?
Yes. Yes. That's the function. So before the new phoenix, reborn of the ashes of its parents, can soar higher to a better, more spiritual and perfect world, still a world of matter, it has to pass through the process of a new birth, so to say. And as on our earth, where the two-thirds of infants are either stillborn or die in infancy, and of course that was certainly true 100 and some years ago, not so true now. I mean, it's getting bad again when you factor in the African, Asian, and even in some of the developed countries. So in our world of effects, on Earth, it is the physiological and mental defects, the sins of the progenitors, which are visited upon the issue. It's an interesting statement because it may refer you to the biblical statement, you know, the sins of the fathers are visited on the unto the seventh generation and so on, somewhere, wherever that is in the, can't remember where it is in the Bible.
Leviticus,
is it? I knew it was in the Old Testament somewhere, but I couldn't remember where. Yes. So, in the land of shadows, the new and yet unconscious ego fetus, which is an interesting statement, because this is the self-conscious ego to be, but it's at a fetal state, at the stage at this time, becomes the just victim of the transgressions of its old self. That is, it's that which animated it in the previous round. So it becomes a kind of mathematical puzzle in a sense, whose karma, merit and demerit, will alone weave out its future destiny. And so in that world, we find but unconscious, self-acting, ex-human machines, souls in their transition state, whose dormant faculties and individuality lie as a butterfly in its chrysalis. And spiritualists would yet have them talk sense, which I think is a wonderful statement.
Devastating.
It's a devastating. And you can imagine, to go back to something we said at the very beginning of this letter, you can imagine how Stainton Moses would react when Sinnott sends him some of this material. This would really be devastating, wouldn't it? And it turned him against us. So caught at times into the vortex of the abnormal mediumistic current, they become the unconscious echoes of thoughts and ideas crystallized around those present. So all of that gets caught up. And this is why this whole, and here it is, why it is in this whole area, which is, and its secondary plastic substance, everything has left its imprint. And so consequently, what K.H. is saying is when you contact mediumistically any of this, what are you contacting? Something that's parading as your grandmother or an American Indian or, you know, whatever it may be. Because it's all present there in, as it were, an imprint that has been left in this substance, in that particular field. So,
Question?
Yes, Cecil.
I'm wondering, when K.H. wrote this, he probably can convince Sinnott of the wrong viewpoint that the spiritualists have. But this is not going to like get to this great large group of spiritualists and convince them that they have the wrong viewpoint. So what do you think his purpose is? What do you think he's trying to accomplish?
You see, I think, first of all, he was trying to help Sinnott see that going the way of spiritualism was a dead end. Therefore, the whole effort, and this was, of course, the sort of the doorway that HPB used to at least begin the message, wasn't it? You know, she felt that, as she says in the original program, they weren't told exactly what to do. They were told what not to do, but not what to do. And so she had to find some mode of addressing the public if this knowledge was to be brought forth again, this which had been taught in the mystery schools, in the sacred, through the sacred mysteries and so on. It seems to me what the Mahatma was trying to do was to, first of all, point out to Sinnott that please don't get involved in spiritualism. This is why. Get involved with mediums. You're not going to get the truth from that. So he's pointing out why, first of all. But he's also going on and saying, our task is to sound really, in one sense, the keynote of what is truth. Not to persuade the spiritualists, although it would be nice if we could. And, it, of course, the Mahatma had hopes for many of them, including for Stainton Moses, that if you could convince Stainton Moses, here was one of the leading people in England and well thought of. And there were many others, C.C. Massey and many others that were certainly notable, that if they could be persuaded that there is a deeper truth that's more worthwhile studying and that leads to an inner transformation, that leads to genuine brotherhood, it leads to bringing about a new humanity, then here is the way. And I think that what he was doing then is trying to give him, first of all, the way in which spiritualism will not work, the mediumistic world will not work, but here is a teaching that goes far beyond that and that leads to true human transformation, a new humanity to be born. As I see it, that's, now someone else may see it differently, but it seems to me that's very clearly brought out in the letters, that this is the purpose. But he has to sort of, he's like, you know, saying, you've got some wrong ideas, let's sort of clear up those, and then we can go forward in a way that will be meaningful, significant, helpful to humanity. And it wasn't, again and again it said, it wasn't for you, Sinnott, your personal information. It's what you can do with this to help bring about a new understanding. Here we're laying out the teachings as much as we can to give a new understanding to the world. And what have we done with it? You know, that's the thing. Jim?
Well, I think the historical record is pretty clear that Hume and Alcott, Sinnott, Southern, Massey, and Moses, early on in their introduction to theosophical philosophy, were very sympathetic in the spiritualist movement.
Yes.
So it was more of a convincing on the part of the Mahatma in their letters to, as you say, convince them that there's a much more to this business of living life than what the spiritualists have to say.
That's right. Yeah. It seems to me it's that, Jim.
And this is in the middle of a movement all over Europe and America that's interested in this.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of fence-sitters as well.
Yes.
People who are willing to talk about this because it's been all over the papers and who may not yet be hardcore spiritualists.
That's right.
So a real argument made to them convince them.
Yes. There were a lot of fence-sitters. But this, Marcia?
And it was also right after the war between the states, the Civil War.
That's
where
right.
More than one-fourth of the population was killed.
That's right.
So a lot of people were having personal, direct experiences.
That's right.
They needed to explain.
I think that's a very significant point.
Yeah.
Because more people were killed in the American Civil War than in any war since that we have fought. It's just absolutely incredible. And it took its rise here in the United States, Rochester, New York, those sisters, I can't remember, Fox sisters, wasn't it? In Rochester, because this was a period of national grieving. This was a tremendous traumatic event, and it was in the United States that the HPB was sent here to the United States, and very shortly after the conclusion of this bloodiest of conflicts that took place of the American Civil War. And people who don't know American history may not be familiar with the fact that this really was a tremendously traumatic brother against brother and family against family and the divisions. And it hadn't healed by any means at that time. And so spiritualism arose. And every, you know, there was a great rush. Well, perhaps I can get in touch with my dead son, my dead husband, my, you know, and it was a period of tremendous upheaval in this country.
And many were experiencing embodied, disembodied spirits approaching them.
Approaching them, yes, yes, that's very true.
So. Joy, the correspondence was intended, intended to be private, mm-hmm. but I have often wondered if the Mahatmas realized that it would eventually be published. And
this is a
we are actually using it now.
That's right.
As tremendous material.
Tremendous material. There is a statement in the letters that these letters were not for publication. Sinnott was to use them. And of course he had already, as we know, by the time letter 18 is written, he had written, this comes right.